Every entrepreneur sells. We all sell. To sell is human. And today on the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast, we're going to talk to Dan Pink about the surprising truth about moving other people. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is your host, John Jantz, and my guest today is Dan Pink. He is, on top of being a return guest, he is the best-selling author of some books, Drive, Free Agent Nation, Johnny Bunko, really books that have, in my opinion, been some of the greatest in terms of being out ahead of the way we work and how it's changing. And today we're going to talk about To Sell is Human, The Surprising Truth About Moving Others. So, Dan, welcome back.
John, it's great to be back.
So, my dad was a salesman, and I mean in the true sense. He got up on Monday, packed the car up, took the bags, went out to the small towns. In fact, he called on Sam Walton back in the Ben Franklin days. And I loved it that you started this book with the Arthur Miller quote, because I distinctly remember him talking about, through the years, he would say, you know, everyone sells for a living. The only difference is that I know that that's what I do.
Right.
And I love that. I mean, that seems to be a really, really major theme in this book, isn't it?
It is. I mean, as your father figured out long ago, and as Arthur Miller wrote in that sad but great play, Death of a Salesman, we are all in sales, and especially now. There's been a lot of changes in the nature of white-collar work that has meant that whether we are actually selling in the sense of making a cash register ring, like your dad did, or you have still one out of nine people in the U.S. workforce are doing that. But you also have the rest of us doing things that are kind of sort of like sales, what I call non-sales selling. They're persuading, influencing, convincing, cajoling. We're all, you know, like it or not, we're all in sales now.
Well, and you, to quote from the book, we all seek resources other than money. And I think that's a killer way to define that.
I mean, it's resources like time, attention, effort. And it's true whether we're at work. It's true whether we're with our family. I mean, that's just the nature of what it is to be human.
Well, here's what I'm curious about, though, because I think in a lot of ways we've always done that, whether we called it selling or not. I don't think that's really changed. But what I see the dramatic change is the role of the traditional salesperson has certainly changed. I mean, in many cases, they can walk into, you know, it used to be salesperson would walk in and inform the person about the product or the features or you know, the problems they were having. And now that person quite likely has more information about the product and the features and the problems that they're having than that salesperson. So, I mean, in a way, when I read your book, and by the way, first, I just need to tell you it's a great book.
Hey, thanks.
But when I read the book, I found myself thinking, you know, this is for the traditional salesperson, certainly as much as it's for the entrepreneur or the business owner who finds themselves selling as well.
Sure. I mean, and your point about information is exactly it. And a lot of what we know about, and it has huge implications. So for instance, in many cases, the actual traditional salesperson was the holder and the receptacle of all the information. So if you were to walk into, even 25 years ago, walk into a Chevy dealership, that Chevy dealer knew more about Chevys and cars than you could ever know. And now that has a number of different implications. It has an implication for what a salesperson actually does. It also is a reason why a lot of us kind of look down on sales. We think of it as sleazy or skeezy, because when the seller knows more than the buyer, the seller can rip people off. This is why we have caveat emptor. So this world of information asymmetry is what defined the sales relationship for a long time. But as you're saying, John, that information asymmetry is ending. And so when the buyer can know as much as the seller, that it's not a change in degree. It's a change in kind. It's a fundamentally different activity. And so traditional salespeople have to rely on a whole other set of qualities and a whole other set of abilities.
Well, yeah, because I mean, the only reason to have a salesperson is that that person is adding value to the relationship or the conversation or the
Right.
process, right? And so, I mean, would it be safe to say that salespeople now have to figure out an entirely different way to add value?
I think that's part of it. They have to do, yeah. I mean, I'll give you one more sort of concrete way of doing that. I mean, it used to be that there was a premium in, if you look at the trajectory of traditional sales, what you have is you have basically transactional sales where the only way to buy something was through a salesperson. The only way to know, get the information you needed was through a salesperson. That, you know, has been ending for a while. And
Right.
then suddenly we come up with this idea of we're going to sell solutions, that the job is to sell solutions. And I think even that is waning right now, in part because if people know, if prospects know exactly what their problem is, they can
Yeah, they
probably
could.
find a solution on their own.
Yeah, they can
And so,
commoditize it, right?
yeah. And so today, what matters less than problem solving is still helpful, but what matters much more is problem finding. Is how do you identify problems that people don't know that they have? How do you surface latent needs? How do you help them see their world in a different way? And that's a very different and very sophisticated skill, and it's becoming one of the central skills. I mean, it's a skill that I call, or quality in the book that I call, clarity, which is actually making sense of murkiness, cutting through the muck, and helping people see things in new ways. There's a good example of Perfetti von Melle, the big candy manufacturer that makes Mentos. That's what it's most famous for. Their salespeople now will call on retailers, as they've always done. Call on retailers, the bodegas in New York City or drugstores or whatnot. And what they'll do now is instead of saying, "Hey, you should buy this many Mentos, you should buy these kinds of Mentos," they basically operate as consultants for these retailers and say, "Listen, we've got the numbers, we've got a lot of data. Here's what's going to work in your store." And so they'll recommend a mix of products that will include Mentos, but will also include products from their competitors. Because they're helping these folks identify problems that need solving.
Well, and in some ways, would you? I mean, I've actually been saying for a long time. I mean, if the traditional sale, if I don't need the traditional salesperson, meaning I don't need them to come knock on my door and try to figure out what my problem is for me, if that role has gone away, then I mean, are in a way, are salespeople now? I mean, because what you just described to me sounds like what every marketing department should be doing, and so I'm wondering if marketing is the new selling.
I think there's something just to say for that. But I also think more broadly that just the whole idea of selling is woven through in everything that everybody is doing. So I'm gonna give you another example. So I write a little bit about a couple of technology companies. One is called Palantir Technologies, $300 million company in the Bay Area. Another one is Atlassian, another software company, about 100 and I think 120, $125 million company. So these folks are doing, or maybe 250. These folks are doing, call it a third, a quarter of $1 billion a year in sales, and they do it without salespeople. They have no salespeople. How can you do $250 million a year in sales without salespeople? Well, that's the question that I asked these folks, and they said, well. And they gave this kind of Zen answer. Their view is that, well, we don't have any salespeople because everybody's in sales, that it isn't this discrete function anymore. It's part of what everybody is doing. So every contact with a company is a form of selling. And that's one of the big changes that's taken place is that we tended to think that all kinds of functions inside of companies were very segmented. I did this, you did that. And now those functions are becoming much more elastic. And the skills that are necessary become elastic, one of the things that they always encompass is some form of sales, whether traditional sales or non-sales selling. And so a lot of even our vocabulary for talking about this has become a little bit antiquated.
Yeah, and I wonder to a large degree that the role that social media or that social media behavior has really played on that too. I think because you think in terms of now entire customer bases that publish information and write reviews and talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I think that it's made companies sort of have to acknowledge that fact that every function is or every certainly every touch or potential touch for the
Yeah.
customer is a marketing function.
Absolutely. And that, yeah, and that's, I think they're coming to that at some level, very slowly. And part of that is because a lot of folks, I mean, you see, I mean, there's a bias against selling. This is why every marketing, every MBA program in America has a course, often almost always a required course in marketing. And very few of them have even a single course in sales. Yeah, as if, yeah, you know, making the cash register ring is somehow incidental to commerce, you know? But I think that our view of sales in all of its dimensions is changing significantly because of some big changes in the economy, and the qualities and skills that people need are changing too. I'm convinced that sales has changed much more in the last 10 years than it did in the previous 100. And so to navigate this new terrain, you need a different set of qualities and a different set of skills.
Now, I think with, you'd have to put on a little weight, but I think you could do a good Alec Baldwin. and I'd love to hear you scream attunement, buoyancy, and clarity. I loved it that you brought that scene in.
An epic scene. I mean, any of your listeners who are in sales know that scene in the movie Glengarry Glen Ross, based on the great play by David Mamet. This is actually the scene that we're describing here is actually not in the play. It's special for the movie, where this young Alec Baldwin goes into this dodgy real estate firm called Mitch and Murray, kind of insults them, questions their masculinity, and then tells these salespeople how to sell. And he gives them the ABCs. And he says, always, B, B, C, closing. Always be closing. Always be closing. And that's our view of sales, you know, this steamroller approach. But now in a world where buyers have as much information as sellers, where buyers can do a lot on their own, where we're all in sales now, even if the cash register doesn't ring, that always be closing has been supplanted by the new ABCs, which are attunement, buoyancy, and clarity. Attunement, buoyancy, and clarity. These are the three qualities that are necessary in either traditional sales or non-sales selling. Attunement is understanding someone's perspective. Buoyancy is so important. It's the ability to stay afloat in what one sales guy told me is an ocean of rejection. And then clarity is, again, this move, which we talked about earlier, from problem solving to problem finding, and also being able to frame your messages, frame your attempts at influence in ways that we know will persuade people.
You know, one of the elements you have, I'm pretty sure it was in attunement, is this idea of mimicking. And I think a lot of salespeople probably have been taught that and kind of get that idea. And I remember early on in my career, I was calling on an older Jewish gentleman, definitely from Brooklyn, and had the, you know, the right out of Central Casting almost, you know, the accent and everything.
Right.
And I remember I started falling into the pattern, and about halfway through it, he said, "What are you doing? You know, are you mocking me?" And I thought, oh, this isn't working exactly like it's supposed to. But it was sort of unconscious, you know. It's funny.
But I think that's a really good point. I mean, mimicking is something that human beings do naturally, and it typically is unconscious. That is, it's a form of affiliation. It's a form of bonding. And actually, you know, there's some, you know, these principles of attunement, buoyancy, and clarity come from a lot of the social science research. And one of the things the social science says is that if you instruct people to mimic, not overtly, but mimic, you know, but just be conscious of mirroring certain gestures, of mirroring people's posture, of repeating their own words back to them in a relatively mild way, that makes you more influential. There's no question about it. And it's not anything deceitful. It's what human beings do. A great exercise for folks interested in this is just to go to a train station or a busy downtown and just watch other people interacting. And you'll see a surprise if you really look at it. If you look at it like an anthropologist, or even better, you look at it like a zoologist and you're studying this creature called human being, you'll see an enormous amount of mimicking. And that's, you know, that's really a core idea here in the book, is that one reason I called the book to Sell Is Human is that today being effective in this realm requires being more human, not being a sleazebag or a robot, but being a more normal human being who's trying to help people make their lives better, who is attuned to what they're doing, and who ultimately is doing what they're doing in the service of something larger than themselves.
Yeah, I guess there's a fine line between manipulation and being authentic.
There absolutely is. And I think the curious thing is that, especially now, manipulation is a very bad long-term strategy.
Right.
Because not only do you have, first of all, it's harder to manipulate people because everyone has relatively similar access to information. So, you know, you think about that with auto dealers. One auto dealer I talked to in the book told me that when she first started in as a car salesperson, the factory invoice of the cars was actually locked in the safe, so even the salespeople couldn't see it. Now, you know, you can walk into your dealership with a factory invoice. Right. You know what the dealer paid for the car.
Yep.
And so, you know, you can't really you can't manipulate and hoodwink people as easily. The other thing, which I don't think folks have figured out entirely, is that if you do manage to do that, if you do manage to dupe, hoodwink, manipulate people, people can talk back.
Yeah.
I mean, they can tell all their entire Facebook community. They can tell everybody on Twitter. They can blog about it. They can Tumblr about it. And so that's a huge change here. So when buyers have as much information as sellers and buyers can talk back, it's a completely different enterprise.
You talk about a human characteristic, I guess we could call it ambiverts, and I think a lot of people tend to think in terms of the backslapping, joke telling, regional leader of sales, and you suggest that there's a middle ground.
The data suggests that there's some interesting research out. The first of its kind, looking at the connection between introversion and extroversion and sales performance. Now, as you say, absolutely right. Our view of effective salespeople is that they are very gregarious, backslappers, strong extroverts, and in fact, those kinds of people are much more likely to get hired as salespeople. But some new research out of the University of Pennsylvania shows that if you look at the correlation between introversion, extroversion, and sales performance, the people who do the best, the people who are strong extroverts, are not very good salespeople. In fact, they're scarcely better than people who are strong introverts, because strong extroverts, they don't like saying no. They like to be the center of attention. They talk all the time. They never shut up. Now, strong introverts are not that great either, because they don't know when to push. They don't know when to close. They can be a little bit timid. And so this research shows that the people who do the best are those folks right in the middle, which are ambiverts, people who are somewhat extroverted, somewhat introverted. And so if you're hiring salespeople, you don't want to very few people would hire strong introverts as salespeople. And that makes sense. But they shouldn't hire strong extroverts either. They should hire the people in the middle, these ambiverts. And so it's really the ambiverts who are really doing who end up performing at a higher level, despite the popular wisdom and despite evidence showing that extroverts are more likely to get hired. They're less likely to do well.
Well, and I think that actually is not surprising to me. I think that really supports this idea of elasticity too, I think, because
that's a good point. Yeah.
The need for the well-rounded approach, the teaching and all the things that you talk about. The book has a tremendous amount of exercises, and my guess is that you're going to spend some time, and maybe you're already doing this, but my guess is you're going to spend some time doing some sales training over the next few years, just because I think people are really hungry for this. And I don't have you created a program as such?
No, not at all.
I'd love to work with you on that.
It's good. I just took a little tentative step into the training business here by trying to develop a program around the ideas in another book, Drive. And that's been working pretty well. It's pretty interesting, and so we'll see about this. But in the book itself, I also think that, you know, there's a lot of opportunity now. One of the great opportunities now throughout our world is the opportunity of some kind of self-education online and whatnot. So this book, while, you know, it makes this argument that we're all in sales now, that sales isn't what it used to be, I say you got to have these three qualities: attunement, buoyancy, and clarity. There are these certain kinds of skills that you need. But there are also all kinds of takeaways, because I figure, hey, you know, people can do an exercise on their own or do an exercise with their team, and they don't necessarily need a formal training program for that. They can just read the, you know, look at the book, take an exercise or two, retrofit it and use it like that. And I think, you know, that's I think that's that can be really effective for people. But I think you're right. You know, a lot of sales training is still stuck in the old world of inauthenticity and information asymmetry.
Yeah, absolutely. So, in fact, if you wouldn't mind, I'd love you to kind of give a snippet of one of these, the time traveler. Can you pull that?
Oh, yeah, that's a really interesting one. Yeah, I'm glad you picked up on that, because I think that's really cool. I've actually done it at my dinner table too. So this is an exercise in attunement. Again, attunement is how do we take someone else's perspective? And there's some interesting science behind that, showing that that people who have a lot of power are less good at attuning themselves to others. You'd mentioned a little bit about mimicry. We tend to think of attunement as kind of this very soft emotional skill, but it actually ends up being a much more sharp-edged cognitive skill. And so one of the ways to get better at this is an exercise that is actually an exercise from improvisational theater. And what it is, it's quite fascinating, is you take two people and you one of them, you come up with a list. You can do it in a group. So you get a group of people, everybody, you come up with a big list of things that didn't exist 300 years ago. All right. What kind of stuff didn't exist 300 years ago? So it could be an iPhone. It could be a lawnmower. It could be airplanes. It could be takeout Chinese food, whatever. And then you pair up in teams, and one person plays the role of someone from 1712, 300 years ago. And the other person plays the role of someone today and has to explain takeout Chinese food or an iPhone or a football goalpost to that other person from 300 years ago. And it ends up being preposterously hard, because there's so much of what we talk about is built on a set of assumptions. And a lot of times our communication goes awry in that we're not attuned to what the other person actually knows. And so this is a really, first of all, it's fun. Second of all, it's a really good wake-up call about the need to be really attuned to who you're talking to and understand the world through their perspective. And we've done it, I mean, I hate to admit this, we've done it at my dinner table here with my kids who, it's pretty interesting trying to explain a Big Mac to somebody from 1712.
Yeah, because we always, you know, we default to, it's like, oh, wait, that didn't exist either.
Exactly. Like, but even the Big Mac is an interesting example, because it's like you have to explain the concept of food being prepared by strangers, which didn't really happen that much in 1712.
Yeah.
You have to explain that, you know, one person eating a quarter pound of beef is a normal thing, you know.
And let's not even get into sesame seed buns, right?
There you go. And so, So it's another great exercise. There are all kinds of things like that. And my theory of the case always on exercises and takeaways is things that are cheap and actionable. And so I tried to, I think we got about 60 and 70 tools, tips, and exercises in here to help people get better at attunement, buoyancy, clarity, to help them get better at pitching, to help them get better at improv, to help them get better at serving.
Yeah, no, I think it's awesome. And certainly, you know, one or two of those exercises is work. In fact, I get to give my stump speech again about the value of books. You know, for $12.95, you get that kind of thing that you can take away. You know, books are the greatest deal on the planet.
I mean, obviously I'm biased on that, but I totally agree with you. I just happened to go away on vacation this past week, the week that before we're talking here, John, and I read a few books, and it was like, wow, okay, look at what I mean. Yep. Took a few hours of my time, cost $20, and that was time and money very well spent.
Absolutely. So I want to end up today on one of my favorite topics that you talk about. And I think that's obviously for salespeople, for anyone that is an entrepreneur, this idea of purposefulness, that's coming through loud and clear, that's becoming a core message, that's becoming what we lead with. And I think that certainly as a salesperson and again, thinking attunement, I think it has become something that we didn't talk about doing maybe 10 years ago, and now has become sort of not only expected, but very attractive.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, there's all kinds of really interesting social science evidence on this, too, that actually, if we're trying to persuade other people, influencing other people, that appealing to a sense of purpose is actually quite effective. Not only is it a good and noble thing to do, but it actually works pretty well. And that's a surprise for people, but that's largely because they don't try it. So so there's an interesting experiment in the that I describe in the book having to do with a hospital trying to get physicians and nurses to wash their hands. And they ended up showing this experiment ended up showing that that reminding the doctors and nurses and other healthcare professionals why they were in healthcare in the first place ended up improving their hand washing inside of the hospital dramatically, as dramatic as any other intervention that had been tried. And it wasn't appealing to their it wasn't giving them a snappy slogan. It wasn't appealing to their self-interest. It was appealing to a sense of purpose. And I also think that, you know, salespeople who have a sense of purpose in what they're doing and who I'm pretty convinced, having talked to a lot of salespeople out there, that if you don't believe in what you're selling, you know, it's not going to work in the long term. You're going to run out of steam. Anything, any kind of scheme will work in the short term. I'm convinced of that, unfortunately, in life. But the sustainability of not believing it, trying to sell something you don't believe in, is limited. People can see through that. And the other thing is that if you don't really believe in what you're selling, you're less likely to become an expert in it. And expertise matters a heck of a lot now in a world where problem solving matters less than problem finding. So having that sense of purpose in yourself and appealing to it in others is, again, not only a good thing for the world, but it's pretty darn effective.
And I would say that that's certainly true of owning a business. I mean, it's just too hard to do this stuff.
Exactly.
If you don't believe in it, if you don't like it, if you don't, you know, believe it's actually doing good. And I think the trick for some people is to understand that they need to capture that and lead with that, because people, you know, they either want it or they don't want it. But that's actually the good news.
It's a great point. I mean, I think leading with, you know, that sense of purpose is. It's leading with it, but it's also just being, you know, kind of filled with it, being imbued with that sense of purpose can make you very effective in moving, persuading, influencing people, as well as selling products and services that you care about and think would make their lives better. You know, my view is that, you know, it's basically there's a very simple test. It's like if the person buys what you're selling, is their life going to be better off? And if the answer is no, not only is it a moral mistake, but it's actually a business mistake.
Yep. So time to go out and get a new job at that point.
Right.
Dan, thank you. It is always awesome. I know you keep busy, and so I really appreciate you taking the time to share your thoughts on To Sell Is Human, the surprising truth about moving others, and you can get it wherever and however you choose to consume books. And hopefully we'll bump into each other out there on the road soon.
Fantastic, John. I'll look forward to that.
All right.
Thanks for having me on the program.
Thanks, Dan.